Get everybody to stand for the place, please.
For the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll call the December meeting to order. I need a motion to approve the minutes from the November 12th board meeting.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Motion to approve the budget to actual reports for the month of November.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Carried. Approve the payment of bills from November 25th and December 9th abstracts.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Public requests. Kate?
Good evening. Of late, I've been looking at legal documents crafted by other municipalities to update their zoning bylaws. These updates are in light of small cell infrastructures, new cell towers, and increasing antennas on existing towers. More and more people are becoming sensitized to electromagnetic fields and even disabled seriously again. More and more people do not want 5G small cell outside their bedroom window. Hence, these matters are urgent property value concerns too. It is time, as soon as possible, to examine our zoning bylaws to deal with deficiencies in our legal protections. If the village grants placement to one applicant, the other services now, it cannot discriminate and deny the same privilege to others later. The zoning updates I've examined cover fundamental issues and state how they shall be handled for the protection of the public and the character of the town. To help guide us, here are the key issues as I discern them. One, the applicant shall show hard proof certified by a qualified independent engineer of a significant gap in personal cellular coverage that the new facility will fill that cannot otherwise be filled. Two, new facilities shall use existing structures to the extent possible. In all cases, the height shall have limits and a 2-day balloon test is required. I know such a test has been Spencer Town. I don't know what the status of all the proceedings there about a proposed cell tower. Setback distances shall be required. Three, at the owner's expense, compliance of facilities and antennas with the FCC's radio frequency RF emissions limits shall be examined annually and unannounced by a qualified independent RF engineer. Four, each small cell shall be considered separately, as each site has unique impact. If granted a permit, a sizable bond shall be posted for each, as guarantee that it will not exceed FCC limits for RF radiations. Five, liability and property insurances in sizable amounts shall be carried. These industries are not insured as it stands now, but shall be carried with the town and its officers as additional insurers. Six, proper maintenance and, if necessary, removal shall be paid for by the owner and a sizable bond posted against these costs. Seven, annual recertification of insurances, bonds, and RF emissions is required. These updates that I've been looking at are from towns in Massachusetts, but the principal legal constraints they work within come from the federal level. Hence, they are good models for us to begin with, too. A Claverack resident told me that a cell tower is proposed in her neighborhood. So, words to the wise, I hope we can begin to do so. I will email the documents that I've been looking at and include our lawyer on the emails.
And we'll get it forwarded to Steve Benson because he's going to be the one reviewing the zoning laws.
And you can review it. You can send it to me, too.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. What do I need
just
to say?
Just send it right to me.
Because you heard what the scope has to be. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mary?
Hi. I'm Mary Stowe. I live right up the street. And can I stand up here? I feel like I'm back here to you. I want to talk to you about a humanitarian crisis that requires an urgent response, and that is electromagnetic hypersensitivity called EHS. This is a little document that I'm trying to read fast.
A little louder?
I don't know if I can read fast and loud at the same time, but I'll try. This is from the International Commission on the Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Fields. So this commission is dedicated to the protection of humans and other species from the harmful effects of non-ionizing radiation. Of highest concern are children, pregnant women, and those with chronic health conditions, including those who are electromagnetically hypersensitive. We attribute the growth of EHS to the rapid expansion in human-caused electromagnetic fields. EHS symptoms may occur through use of devices or exposure to infrastructure such as mobile phones, cordless landlines, Wi-Fi or Bluetooth-enabled computers, Wi-Fi routers, smart meters, electric vehicles, power lines, household electrical appliances, and cell phone towers. As we all know, our bodies contain electric magnetic fields, but that's very different from what we're being exposed to from all the devices that I've just mentioned. These are different from those that are found in nature, which makes them disruptive to normal biological functioning, even at what are labeled low levels. EHS is a multi-systemic physical response with symptoms that can vary among individuals due to physiological differences. Symptoms can include sleep problems, fatigue, headache, dizziness, heart palpitation, tinnitus, skin rash, chemical sensitivity, visual, sensory, and mood disturbances. The U.S. National Council on Disabilities 2022 Health Equity Framework recognizes that electrical hypersensitivity is associated with the use of wireless communications and electrical technologies and other sources of non-ionizing radiation, which may trigger disabling and life-threatening cardiac, respiratory, neurological, and other adverse physical reactions. The World Health Organization recognizes the distress and the disability associated with EHS. According to the European Commission's 2019 report on digitalization challenge for Europe, each day the number of EHS sufferers increases, according to new estimates, between 3% and 5% of the population are electrosensitive, meaning that some 13 million Europeans may suffer from this syndrome. And these technologies continue to expand, and so because of that, the incidence of EHS will grow. Practically all of these exposures are now inescapable. You can't put yourself in a Faraday cage and walk around in it. Common outcomes of this are job, school, and home loss, separation from family and friends, inability to access medical care, and general lack of access to all areas in the public domain. Sometimes people have to go and live in a cabin in the woods because there's just too much electromagnetic radiation for their bodies to bear. So this is a neglected disruption of lives, which is inhumane and deeply troubling. In conclusion, the European Academy for Environmental Medicine reports that EHS symptoms are occurring in response to low-intensity exposures, which are orders of magnitude below the exposure limits currently supported by many governments. Government regulatory agencies should, but do not, investigate ways of harm and update policies to ensure greater protection for not only the health and welfare of the population, but for plants and animals and their habitats as well. This international commission has been reviewing multiple types of scientific evidence and individual case reports closely and contributing to electromagnetic hypersensitivity science. Our goal, I have to stop.
Your time, the 5 minutes is up, yes.
Okay, so you missed the last bit.
What's the last
bit? Our goal is to see EHS formally recognized as an EMF-induced external cause of injury by public health agencies worldwide, and greater recognition of the needs of those who are EHS disabled, so they can live a ordinary life without having to hide out in the woods.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Donna?
Just a few brief words. We're very lucky to have members of our community willing to do this research on their own. There's no compensation. They're not professional engineers or scientists. And so we've been given this opportunity to get educated, if you will, on some of these hazards that the people in the village face. And it's my hope that the village will take whatever steps it feels are appropriate or necessary to help safeguard the health of its citizenry. There may be situations where, for instance, we're confronted by an FCC or a federal agency where the village doesn't have any authority, if you will, no legislative oversight. But this doesn't prevent a village or any other entity from on the village or city letterhead writing letters on behalf of its citizenry if there are certain issues that might benefit the populace. So as you do your deliberations, as you get more educated, I hope that there might be some proactive things that the village can do to help its citizens. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. You're up, Rob.
Nothing new to report, just ongoing projects the board's aware of.
Ms. Jessica?
Dark first things for the water turnoff. We're on December 4th with 17 people. The water turnoff will be on the 11th. I started working with a union attorney on the upcoming contract. Applied for New York State DOT permit. Met with Columbia County MIS regarding computer upgrades. Worked on the quarterly calendars that we've done. Met with Bob Patterson regarding budget and yearly transfers. Again, mining final reads and property transfers. Compiled Nice Lake bill, water and sewer, Nice Lake bills for the water and sewer locations for rural water. Trustees will judge the lights around the village for the annual holiday lighting contest on Wednesday, December 18th. The office will close at 11 on the 24th. We will be closed on the 25th for Christmas, and then we'll be closed Wednesday, January 1st for New Year's.
We all gonna. What time you guys want to meet on the 18th?
6 o'clock.
Six. Is that good with everybody?
Mm-hmm. I'll be out of town.
All right. All right. I'll drive you.
And Jess, can you say we're closed on the 24th, the
25th? 24th. We close at 11.
Close at 11. 24th at 11.
And then the 25th we're closed, the 1st we're closed.
You guys having a party on the 24th?
No, we're just closing like this.
And the 31st, close at 11 or no?
No.
Okay. Okay. I'll put that up.
Rain?
Hello.
So for buildings and grounds, we have the new lights that have been installed at the pavilion, the dusk to dawn lights, and it's definitely brighter. And it has been nice.
No complaints yet. I haven't gotten any.
No, I got one from one of the neighbors that lives behind, but it's not pointing at her. So, and Jason told me that we could always get shields should it bother people. But it has been nice to be able to see, and I think it's keeping other things down.
And have we taken down the tree yet, or not yet?
I don't think we've taken down the trees one step at a time. We got the lights. Okay.
Yeah. Not complaining, definitely not. Let's see. We have the public presentation with Bryce and Litka, the exhibition of drawings of the community center and Canal Street parking lot. There was an art opening with Marion Vino that hangs until January 4th. 2025. She also donated a painting for an art raffle, so we've been doing a lot of different fundraisings. I finished a digital navigator training and earned $500 for the library. So if anyone ever has some computer issues or things, they can come and I can help navigate that. Currently hiring for a clerk position. I attended the Directors Association meeting in Poughkeepsie. Funding. We received our $15,000 from Clawbrick, Mickey Clawbrick. We also got a $5,000 grant from the John Henry Eldred Foundation, and that is for a new rug for the children's room, which I've already received, and it looks great. Some furniture to replace some rickety furniture and some after-school programming for children. September stats, we had 781 in the library. Circulation in and out 2,238. Free fridge visits were down to 115 because we're not getting the vegetables anymore. So if anyone knows, we really need some food for the fridge. It's something that a lot of people rely on. So we're taking donations. In-person program attendance was 105. People attending outside meetings in the cultural center up to 146. New library cards, lots of new patrons, is at 8. We had, well, it says upcoming, but we already had our travel talk about Bulgaria with Tom Pano and Peter Johnson. We had the Winter Bazaar yesterday, which was really well attended. I was really happy with that. We have an embroidery workshop coming up, art raffle drawing, and also it was just approved at the last board meeting that we will be closed Christmas Eve and Christmas, New Year's Eve and New Year's this year due to staff shortage at the moment.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Community Center. Doug?
Okay. Report for November, written by Julie. The center was checked during the month. Under facilities program, the truck day held in November was reported on last month. Scouts continue to meet three times a month. Amelia McIsaac completed the shadow puppets on November 6, 13, 20, and December 4. The felt hats workshop was canceled. Three mending workshops took place, and they were successful. Julie's in the process of working with Soren Dietzel and Jeffrey Opio from Uganda to sponsor a music workshop and performance in February. And I checked on the place the other day, and she's got the tree up too.
Remember, we had 7 calls for service, 1 arrest, 1 assist, 68 property checks, 4 UTCs issued, 9 warnings. There's a man who will partake with the Santa Claus Club the 21st, the parade. Anything else we discussed?
When's overnight parking stop?
December 1st.
December 1st?
Yeah, started. So okay. We've been issuing, we started issuing warnings. Just had that posted, right? And that was, did that go on the film lot? Facebook page yet or no?
Probably. We have something on the front door.
Yeah, some on the front door, so we usually give them a couple of weeks.
I went up through town Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. There's 7 cars.
Yep.
So. It's working.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks you get warnings and we'll start writing tickets.
Got any best tickets then? Yes, ma'am. 21st. 6 p.m.
All right, Sally.
Good evening, everybody. So, quick report here. The regular borough meeting was held on 26th of last month, attended by the mayor, Bob McFarlane, the chair, the former, myself, and Karen Sherwood. Number two, the presentation by Welcome Look for Architects held on November 15th in the library was discussed at the meeting. The presentation and open house at the library, thank you, library, very much, netted a total of 52 attendees over the day, including Trustee of Cropper, Julie Verrazoni, ED, Verrazoni, I never get it right, so sorry. Director of the Community Centre, the BOA committee members, residents of the village, business owner, and the DOS EOA senior management. It was great that the senior management came down, and the officers of Assembly Member Dee Barrett and the Columbia Economic Development Corps. The event was well received by the majority of attendees, raising the high standard of the architectural designs and excited to see that the two sites are on the next step to develop construction funding proposals to be built. It is expected to take up to 4 years to complete the funding and construction. The intention is for the Canal Street parking lots to be the first site to achieve funding and construction, followed after completion by the site for the community centre and the waterfront regenerative redevelopment. And we discussed that in the meeting, how that's all going to work together. At stage phases, but basically it's all going to be moving forward at the same time. Number three, the two sites have received a very good kickoff by generating an American Institute of Architects AIA Westchester Hudson Valley Award presented to Rice and Lipka Architects for Community Planning at the annual award ceremony held by the AIA Westchester on November the 15th. Approval of number four, moving on to the zoning, last thing on the list. Approval of the request for proposals, RFP, for the BOA funding zoning analysis project was received by the DOS. So basically they approved our RFP. The RFP will be published in December on the state contract report going on the zoning website. And this project, the zoning project, is being chaired by Steve Benson, with the selected committee members, including Chris Hoppy, Linda Gaffer, and Doug Pond. And then moving on quickly to the LWRP grant updates. The WAC, WAC, which is the Watershed Advisory Committee, next meeting is scheduled for December 11th with LaBella Associates to continue to review the comments received by 9, which is the keystone chapter of the Watershed Management. It's a description and assessment of the water bodies and the watershed resources for the watershed management plan, and that goes out, you know, to share project with Oldsdale, Osterlitz, Ghent, and Cava. So it's a big area beyond the that's affecting us, affecting the area. Okay. Number two on the LWRP, emails received by PBI from Tom Pano and Trustee Gitterman in November. The emails were reviewed by the BOA committee in consult with Barbara Segal, who's the chair of the LWRP Watershed Project. It was agreed that PBI would again consult with the DOS and the Bella Associates, who's the consultant hired for the Watershed Management Plan, in order to set up a conference call to be held in the village office aimed at providing answers to a set of questions Tom Kramer has presented. This conference call is now proposed by LaBella to be held in January date and time to be confirmed depending on the daytime availability of the mayor, Barbara Sabell, Borough Committee members, Tom Payne, and Trustee Gilpin. Village board members are definitely encouraged to attend, and once we've started to get the dates in focus, so that the village board members know. The conference will address the LWR timeline and the topic of dredging and other solutions to address the silt buildup in Summit Lake. An email has been sent to all parties notifying the intent. And then the last quick update from the historic district is that for the month of November, we had no further requests from anybody in the village for assistance with the tax preservation tax credits and assistance with SHPO. And so the number of people, property owners that we've assisted, remains at 10 since the historic district was approved to be listed on the state and national registries in March of this year. That's it.
And I'm proud to be one of those people, so thank you for your help, Sally.
Oh, well, you were great.
Thank
you.
Good. Please,
you all open the newsletter this week, because it's
a very nice feature
to build it. So it's going to be beautiful. So why we need
it. How big
is
it?
Okay, good. Thank you. Tom? Can I, you
all, so
you can send me, and then I can
do
yours.
Okay, I'll send it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Tom?
Sally, can I just ask a brief follow-up question about, you said something about, you mentioned, I believe, it that we would, the desire is to go forward with the parking lot, but also that everything will go forward at the same time. And so I'm just wondering how you're envisioning, if you would share how you envision that.
Right, so it's pretty simple. So we take a block of 4 years, right? And that 4 years is based on Rice and Lichfield's and their estimates that we projected out, you know, would increase every year, right? So those estimates are based on that. So we're gonna take a block of 4 years based on the community center site. The parking lot site is gonna take 2 years, but we're gonna kick them off at the same time so that Brian estimates that, so the 4 years, we start funding both. The funding, if we're on schedule and everything is working out according to plan, that means that the parking lot should start construction within 2 years. Brian estimates that we can probably get construction done in 8 to 15 months, right? So that's happening. But at the same time that that's happening, we're still continuing on that 4 year block and moving ahead with the community centre and obviously the lake.
The reason it happens like that, Deborah, is so we don't double up on meetings, because it's tough enough to get people in the same room at the same time once,
yeah,
let alone three times. So that's why everything happens at once. I questioned it myself in the beginning, but after it was explained to me, it makes total and complete sense.
Got it. Thank you.
The way that the funding matrix are done is that everything has to work together, because there's leverage in all of the, you know, by doing the community center, it helps with the lake. By doing the lake, it helps with the parking lot. So these, you know, the environmental aspects of the sites, lake, community center, parking lot, are all interrelated. So it does mean that we can't just do one. It wouldn't be effective.
Got it. Makes sense.
20 years to get there, where we can roll them out with an expectation of, you know, 4 year time, which is what we budgeted for.
All right. Tom?
Okay. So the Climate Smart Community, we are finally kicking off the decarbonization study for this building. That's with the consultant, New World Energy, and both it'll be an assessment of the mechanical system and the building envelope. We're going to schedule another meeting with NYSERDA to be sure that we're getting the money transferred from the audit that was not done on the US building transferred to this project. And we're expecting that to happen. Staying with NYSERDA, Jeffrey and I met with NYSERDA today. This is over the $100 grant, which we have been awarded. We have the contract that needs to get signed before the end of this month. And about an hour ago, we decided that the director should be me rather than Jess, because I will have more of the answers and we'll be able to streamline it more quickly. Of course, I will then need direct contact with Jess for whatever I need from the office. But it's the one that came in as an email to you. That I came in late this afternoon. And then I also attended a meeting on for what's tax credits. So these tax credits, it's called tax credits for direct payment. And I've raised this issue before here, that is programs for when you're getting money to do measures, sustainability measures and reducing carbon emissions. If you're a business, you get a tax incentive associated with a particular measure. Municipalities could not participate in this, but in the new IRA law, the rulemaking for that law was just issued at the end of September. So now municipalities can participate in a tax credit. Now, you don't pay taxes, so a tax credit is no good to you, but so that's why they call it a direct payment. They make it equivalent of what a business would get, and then they give that same amount of money back to the village. And this is a very important funding stream that villages and towns are taking advantage of. The Zoom I was on this afternoon, there was no one from Columbia County was there, but a couple of towns along Lake Champlain have already started. And just to explain how this works, imagine the water tower and that improvement you had to do to the water tower. Whatever that final number came to, that final construction number for that water tower improvement, if that had something to do with reducing carbon emissions, you could take that project and apply, and you would get one-third of the funding. Whatever you spent on that, one-third of it would come back on a check from the IRS to the village. And the best thing is there's no, you have open discretion on how you spend that money. So it's a very important source of funding that I hope the village will begin to. You need more help in understanding how it works. It is complex, but because Climate Smart is working only on measures to reduce carbon emissions, that means almost everything we're doing. So another example, I forget the name of the town, is it called Westport? On Lake Champlain, they just recently bought two very, very expensive electric trucks. And they are putting in now to get a third of that expense, that big expense, will come back to that town through this program. So it's just something we will certainly, we being the Climate Smart community group, will be giving you this information and where we see some opportunities. So the first opportunity to come up is with this $100,000 grant, because this is for a geothermal system. It can only go towards a geothermal system for this building. And the consultant, that was one of the first things he mentioned from his experience, since he was the person who did the audit on this building, and he's familiar with geothermal systems, he thought that would be a good mix to do, or a good opportunity for this building to keep geothermal to become carbon neutral. So if all of that goes through, the total expense of just putting in that geothermal system, one third of that can come back to the village if you apply under this program. So that's the scale of the amount of funding that we're talking about. So that was already discussed today in doing the grant, and I think I already said we think the goal is to get signed before the end of the month. And I raised the question, what if you locate a Native American burial ground or something, you know, some fatal flaw that you can't put the geothermal system in? This funding can get, they don't like it, but it can get transferred to, say, to a solar panel that you can switch it. They don't like it, but they'll do it. So if, with an explanation of, you know, why you have to do this. I'm hoping that won't happen, because I personally think geothermal makes the sense to go with this building, because you have such a variety of heating needs. So you need some heating where you're keeping the trucks, but certainly not to the comfort of the unit level. And geothermal would just work much better at those varying needs. So now switching to, so we will be getting this meeting on Wednesday. We're going to be reviewing the two proposals for the solar panel installation, both for this building and the sewage treatment plant, just so we can have that. Also, to get that in the works and see where, so we know how much money that would be come to, so we know how to raise money for that as well. Because that's significant for the sewage treatment plant, because it's the highest energy user in the village. So if we can offset that with the solar panel array, that will make sense. So we'll give you the information on what we review that on Wednesday. We're also in conversation. We have a dialogue going with the sustainability director of the EG group. That's the international conglomerate that owns the Cumberland Farms and other businesses like that across the globe. We managed to track down the sustainability director, and he is interested in a public-private partnership for installing fast EV charging stations at that location. It's at the very beginning, so there's nothing to discuss right now, but just the fact that we've got the attention is important. Again, there's a 30%, you can get this 30% direct payment, whatever the cost is to the, if there's any cost to the village, for putting in these electric charging stations in a public-private partnership, 30% of that comes back. So it's just a way of leveraging how to get these things done. And again, it's only for measures that reduce carbon emissions. The resiliency adaptation documents are getting at the final stage, so we'll be able to present those final documents. We got great comments back. And although we did find out that we can't list the library as a heating and cooling refuge area because there's no backup. There's no backup generation.
Generator.
Right, so that excludes it. I don't, what other buildings in the village have backup generator? Is it this building has one?
DPW.
Okay, we'll have to bring that up and try and figure that out, because we need to list where these heating and cooling refuge areas can be, even if it's not in the village. But we'll try and figure something out with that. And I believe that's it.
Probably.
Our last meeting was Thursday, November 21st, which due to some illnesses we did via Zoom. We reviewed a market analysis report compiled by Planning, who was subcontracted by LeBaird, our consultant, to help meet the MWB requirements of the grant. This is a lot of census and economic development data, as well as some of the kinds of housing data for our reference. exciting part. We, tomorrow, December 14th, we will be having our second public meeting for community input and review. It will be a drop-in open house and will run from 4 to 8 here in the Village Hall. I hope all of you can attend, and so we can see where, so you can all see where we are and add your thoughts. And we also have the final housing assessment to incorporate into the data. And after the public meeting, we do still think that the full draft of the plan will be available, will be prepared and available for January. We're still working on that. So, yeah, sometime in January.
Did it? Perfect.
Robin, did you email that to me?
I did.
Okay. I will make it on my computer to make this back before we leave.
DPW and water. I want to thank Town of Clover for helping us out with the break on Main Street twice. They did a hell of a job. One of them was on a Sunday after Thanksgiving and wasn't. Nobody was happy, but they got it done, and they were very efficient doing it. So if you could thank Louie and his guys, I would appreciate it.
You're welcome in the morning.
They had an inspection by DEC down at the plant. Everything was fine. They got to straighten up some maps. Nothing serious. I think the leaves are done. He's done picking up leaves, and that's about it for that. Now for my report, we're still in search of a building inspector. Doug and I hired one, and today he was supposed to start to quit. So we're back in search of. Just trying to get something going before Lee leaves on the 31st. We had a couple of applicants we may have to re-interview, but we'll find one. Other than the regular meetings that I go to every month, except for the water break on Main Street, it's been pretty quiet. Mr. Cropper.
Okay. First, I tried to solve the 29 Prospect Street puzzle. Barbara, you called Jeff Cox from him. Did he get back to you?
No. Well, Peter's been in communication with him the first time.
Okay.
But I haven't heard that he called back.
Okay. If he needs me to do anything more. And then I talked to Rob a little bit about it earlier, and he's going to, you know, check into the ownership of that property. And
yeah, it's not Tim Simpson. It's the real, the fellow that bought the Burby, all the Burby properties. What are they
called? Philmont Holdings.
Yeah, it's Philmont Holdings. Because all the tires are in the back
there.
Away from the
Simpson. Oh, where the tires are is Philmont Holdings.
Yes.
Not the Simpson property.
Yes.
Tires were stacked up against the garage on the Simpson property. They were right up against the garage. The garage is Simpson's property.
Yes.
And that's where,
unless
somebody's gone and thrown them off the property, they were on the Simpson's property.
But Officer Cox went and looked at that, right? Did he come and look?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, Peter doesn't have any follow-up, but he wants me to do something, let me know.
All right.
So, nobody's getting anywhere, but we're trying.
Okay.
And as Brian said, we interviewed building inspector candidates. We thought we had one, and then you heard what happened. We did several interviews. Attended the Rice and Lipka presentation. I went to the special meeting we had. Brian and I met with Vernon.
Keith
was there, just regarding police issues, just to keep on top of everything. The first water main break I went to twice on the weekend there. Not that I could do anything, but just offer support and state the village. They didn't do anything. And checked the properties. Generally, things are okay. The flag at the community center, I did tell Louis about that. It's all ripped off. And the only other issue was I went up there when Harrington's were up at the community center, and they have that mini split fix, so that's what's heating the center now. So that's all good. That's it.
Jason?
Only thing worth mentioning at this time is that the fire department's been offered an opportunity to apply for a federal grant in the next 2 weeks. So Mark Rounder and I are working on writing up buildings grant for this building. And so Tom, can you stay after so I can talk to you for a couple minutes? So that's going to put new floors downstairs, new garage doors, new windows, and increase all the R value downstairs, better insulated, and a few other minor things. But we're working hard to get that done. And we don't get it done this year. We'll try to get it next year. So expect a better building, hopefully, and more efficient. That's it.
Skip?
Just looking for, waiting for the light judging, Santa Claus parade, and our usual lunch for the end of the year at High Falls. Other than that, no sidewalks are done for this year.
Good.
That's it.
Deborah?
I applied for the multimodal grant, which Dee Barry recommended us again this year for another $50,000 for the sidewalks. We have to get that in by the 16th. I edited and finalized the housing study and submitted the closing docs on Friday with Jess's assistance. I attended last Friday, also the 2024 Land Use and Sustainability Development Conference, and I was invited to speak on a panel there about housing needs studies and plans, because they felt that Philmont is, you know, unique in doing in being able to do a housing plan with being such a small municipality. So Philmont represented and presented well. I attended the kickoff meeting with the project manager for the $100,000 NYSERDA grant for the geothermal heat pumps today with Tom. And I attended the Climate Smart Task Force meeting and the workshop meeting. I dropped in on the shadow puppet workshop at the community center. And that was just amazing. It was so inspiring to see what they were accomplishing. And I reached out to the AMP Up folks to get our refund, and I have not heard back, and I will follow up with them again. And that's it.
For 26 calls for the month, we had a couple fire calls we went to, and it was great that we were able to respond and put those out. We did have one unruly person in the village, and I think I talked to during the burn ban, they had a fire in their yard and then had some lift to the chief about it, didn't want to put it out. I talked to Lee about that and wrote a report about it. Important on this though, so apparently at some point the truck's going to need new tires. It's just in the report. They're still waiting on our approval to proceed in forming a fire district with the existing contract areas in Hillsdale and Clawbrick. So we need to write a letter about that. They're still, for anyone who doesn't know, if you want to get caught up real quick, please attend the meetings. But the fire department in Philmont may end up forming a shared district service with just Philmont or with Philmont and Mellonville, which just means basically they're going to take control of their finances and their work instead of us handling it, which I think would be welcome. But they're going to be in a lot tougher spot if they need some money in the long run. In any case, that's still getting worked out. We're working on the SAM grant for the truck bays and the downstairs assembly. And we have workplace and violence training coming up on the 12th, and I'm meeting with some of your climate people on the 12th also. So a pretty quiet month. That's it.
Perfect. Correspondence, there's a list on the table, hard copies in the office. Motions and resolutions.
Motion to authorize the mayor to sign the county MIS shared service agreement for 2025.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Motion to authorize the mayor to sign a proposal for coverage from Hartford Life and Accident Insurance Company for basic coverage for the New York State Volunteer Cancer Benefit Program.
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Motion to allow the mayor to sign the multi-module project application supplement form and project information sheet for the sidewalk grant.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor? Carried.
Motion to accept with regret Renee Dobert's resignation as library clerk effective immediately.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Motion to allow the mayor to sign a retainer agreement with Hinman Straub for labor representation.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
And motion to authorize the agreement with NYSERDA for geothermal implementation in the village hall.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Unfinished business.
I have one thing that occurred to me, and can you ask Chrissy about the Auctions International? If she needs help with that, I'm sure Skip or I can call her. We have that Silverado, the Tahoe, and a boat that we need to, they've all been declared surplus. So if we could maybe do that soon, because otherwise they're just going to turn into mouse houses.
New business?
Hey, Jason, I messaged the chief. Just as a reminder, tomorrow, all day, we're going to be using the bay.
Okay.
Downstairs, we've got.
Who needs to come with the trucks then?
We just need one. He said the keys in the one vehicle on the end.
Oh,
we'll pull it out
and go for it.
Just
it's a cop car.
So it's kind of we're getting the LPRs and the cameras all installed tomorrow.
Cool, great. I'll remind him.
Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're done.
Good night, Philman.
All right.